Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Heroes Power Hour. I'm JR, and this week things are a little bit different. Quiz is out for this week, but we decided we wanted to get together a little and talk about BlizzCon. So I'm joined here by a couple of guys here who were also at BlizzCon with us. You will know them pretty well, first off. Out in the land of no water, otherwise known as California, we have Jimmy, a.k.a. DJ Tyrant. Jimmy, how's it going?
It's good, minus the lack of water. Although they shot it through that fountain in front of BlizzCon all day.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet everybody in California was just, like, really mad about that, too. And just, what are you guys doing? This is, like, I'm imagining California here in a couple of years to look like Mad Max.
What do you think those protesters were out in the front for?
Yep. All the way from Michigan, land of the Youpers, we have King Youper himself, Charlie, a.k.a. Balrog Fan BP.
Now, I
do your best Youper impression, Charlie.
I will say I reside the farthest away from the Youpers possible in Michigan. I literally live on the border of Ohio, so I do not associate with the Youpers, nor will I do their accents. I wish I knew how to.
That's not what you told me this weekend.
No, this weekend, I remember I told you I was going to leave the water running in the hotel the whole time in the shower and the sinks just to spite California.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You're thinking of the other Charlie from Michigan.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, my bad.
That guy's a jerk, eh?
Oh, my goodness.
My bad, guys. So, okay. Okay, the introductions are done. We're really here because we wanted to talk about BlizzCon, right? So, Jimmy, I'm going to start with you. BlizzCon was this weekend. We all have different backgrounds when it comes to BlizzCon. We all did three. I'm sure we all had three very different experiences when it comes to BlizzCon. Jimmy, you've been to BlizzCon for many, many, many years now, as have I. How's your BlizzCon experience this time? Because I know it was a lot different than your previous.
It was totally different because I was working behind the scenes with the StarCraft team for Blizzard. I was helping manage the talent there, and seeing the show before everything is set is very interesting. They're, like, everything's not in place, and wow, it was just totally different from what I'm used to, and it was a little bit like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm missing out on a whole lot, but after, it was just such a good experience to see it from that side and be able to hang out with a lot of the StarCraft community. And even, I did it for the week before as well, for the opening week stuff for the esports tournament. So I got to hang out with a lot of the Heroes community people. I actually had dinner with Babel and Gillyweed, and we talked a lot about everything. I'm not trying to brag.
No, such a humble brag. We're changing our name from One Job Jimmy to Big Time Jimmy. Moving forward.
But yeah, it felt like I shouldn't have been there, to be honest, because it felt like, felt a little bit out of my element and that I didn't necessarily belong there, but it was a lot of fun to hang out with everyone, and even related to the Heroes tournament, it was funny to see who was practicing in the player area in Burbank and who wasn't for BlizzCon.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to be. That would be pretty cool to see it from, you know, kind of the behind the scenes perspective, especially from the esports side of things. I'm not sure if I would enjoy it because I would rather just kind of feel free to do what I want during BlizzCon. I don't think I'd want to actually be tied down and want to work it. I mean, I work it enough as it is, as press and media, and even that feels a little restricted on me, that I'd rather just, there's a lot of stuff that I miss because of it. I couldn't even imagine working full time there.
I'll say you're crazy. I'd mug it up for the camera and do whatever they wanted. It'd be great. I'd love to be working there. And Jimmy, it might feel awkward because it was your first time there, but you definitely worked hard and earned your way there, brother. It's not like it was some kind of gift you were just given. You worked really hard to get there, so kudos to you, sir.
Agreed.
Well, thank you.
Agreed.
But it was nice, though, that Heroes went long on Friday, because it meant I got off working and was able to go over there and watch the last set of games between DK and Braveheart, or whatever the other team was.
# technical problems.
Yeah, they seem to have some technical problems there that really hindered them and moved them back several hours.
Yeah, I don't know what was with them, but the StarCraft stage was totally fine. Just
oh, the StarCraft stage looked ridiculous.
Yeah,
it was something out of a sporting event, the way it was set up. I mean, there was just like top. I killed Jimmy with that. Sorry, guys. It was like top to bottom, just an amazing like setup. It looks so good.
Yeah, it was the same setup as last year, but if you haven't seen it, definitely like look up some videos of it, because it was basically a white stage, but they projected all this stuff on the screen, so stuff would transition to the map they were playing on, and then when players were introduced, it would change to a Protoss or Zerg or Terran background. It was just really cool.
I'm just going to say this. I'm glad that we're recording three separate instances here, because I'm going to spare you guys from hearing Jimmy just die there a minute ago.
You'll hear me reference it, but Jimmy coughed for literally 7 minutes. The paramedics came, revived him, and now we're good to go again.
Oh, man.
He's got a little con crud going on, but we'll hammer through this.
I may have been patient zero.
Yeah, so Charlie, your BlizzCon experience, I know, was different than ours. This was your first one.
Yeah, I was a virgin up until recently. Then, graciously, BlizzPro took my BlizzCon virginity, and it was just a wonderful experience. I was very happy to do it, and everything was just... If you're on the fence about going to BlizzCon, or you just think like it's something that's not worth saving up for, you're wrong. Go. It's the best experience you can possibly have. If you're a fan of Blizzard games, if you're a fan of the hype, I mean, I in no way expected to be sitting down, and then, because I was lucky enough to have a media badge my first year, which I'm sure is crazy to some people, but I was sitting in there, and then they opened the gates to let everybody in, and I swear to God, it was like a Beatles music video, the way the stampede was happening, and people were screaming and hollering and clamoring to get to the Blizzard event and see all the new Blizzard content, and just so many booths, so many people, everybody around you appreciates the same thing that you do, and it's just a wonderful feeling, and I never once felt like I didn't belong. Which is rare for me. I always feel out of place in a lot of places. So to go to one place and just feel like, yes, this is my home now, it was a great feeling, and I really enjoyed being at BlizzCon.
Yeah, I hear that. I remember my first BlizzCon was 2008, and I remember feeling the exact same way. I'm like, I am with a bunch of people right now that all enjoy the same thing that I do, and each one of us all have something in common. And if I can sit down and get, when I go get something to eat, and I sit down and at a picnic table with three other people that I've never met before, and we just start talking about video games, we start talking about World of Warcraft, we start talking about Diablo or anything like that, it's just an immediate connection. It's like, here, I have three automatic friends that... We're just going to hit up conversation and talk about the same thing for the next, 20 minutes while we eat. And then, if I see them later during the show, we'll give each other high fives, because we're like, hey, we're buddies now. I mean, BlizzCon last year was like that with me. I met a bunch of people from Australia, like the day before the event, and, hung out with them quite a bit one night, and then... instant buddies the rest of the rest of BlizzCon.
Yeah, I actually sat down and had a long conversation with some German YouTubers. And I was just sitting there, and they're talking in German, back and forth, back and forth. I look over, and I'm just like, I'm going to give this a shot. So what game do you guys play? Oh, we play Hearthstone primarily. And we just ended up talking about Blizzard games for a long time, and it was just really cool to see something like that happen. It's exactly like you said. I mean, anywhere you sit, you can look down, look across the table, and have something in common with that person, and it was such a great feeling.
Yep, and, like I said, this was my 7th BlizzCon, 8th BlizzCon. I don't remember how many I've gone to now. But my experience comes from mostly a media background, mostly, trying to herd all the cats known as BlizzPro. Make sure that they're in the right place for interviews, videos that we need to do, Making sure our team No Pants, which is our basically our home team, they're the ones that are stuck at home watching the virtual ticket, pumping out articles about the panels as they come out or as the reveals come out, because we're all busy at the convention. You know, it's much easier for them to cover this stuff than it is for someone that's on the show floor. So making sure all that content's getting hit. It's a very busy time for me. But luckily I get to usually enjoy to play some games, usually about an hour or two on the first day. More so on the second day, because the second day is a lot less busy. But the biggest part of BlizzCon for me is meeting everybody that's part of BlizzPro, all of our listeners, all of our fans, all of our readers. I mean, you guys came by and, like, visited us at Con Before the Storm, where we had a little get-together for a Well-Met podcast and some of the BlizzPro people there. You guys came by and visited us other times, you know, when we're at the Hilton and other places like that, and it was just so much fun to meet so many of you. And it was cool at the Con Before the Storm, because not only did I get to meet some people that listened to, you know, Well-Met, but there were several people that came up and said, hey, where's Twiz, and where's the Heroes Power Hour guys, and of course me and Nineball were there. We just didn't have a lot of room to fit everybody else in, unfortunately. They had us kind of crammed in a little corner, so, but for all you guys that came out and visited us, thank you. That made BlizzCon for me this year, because I have never had so many people come up to me and tell me that they like what we do. This was a first for me, because I feel like the last two BlizzCons that BlizzPro's been around in has been, we've been relatively unknown, and I think we're starting to get out there a little bit more in the community, and I think it's really awesome to see.
We really do run the gambit and cover everything, and I think we've got a lot of cool people. I can't name one BlizzPro member I don't want to be around, and it's nice to finally meet them all, so it's good to see that other people in the community are starting to see that.
Yeah. So anyway, this is a Heroes of the Storm podcast. We're talking a lot about BlizzCon, but Heroes of the Storm had a really big presence at BlizzCon this year. You know, they during the opening ceremonies, they announced three new heroes, a new map, and a new game mode. Let's start off with the new heroes. We had Greymane, Cho'Gall, and Lunara. All three are Warcraft heroes. Coincidentally enough, we all thought they were going to be StarCraft heroes in a StarCraft map. The new map is Towers of Doom, which is a Warcraft-related map. And, of course, the new mode is Arena. We'll talk about all those here in a bit. But let's start off with the new heroes, guys. Did any of you get to play any of the new heroes?
DJ?
Yeah, I played Lunara in a game on the new map Towers of Doom. She's really interesting. She doesn't have a mount, but she moves 20% faster than normal heroes. She kind of has a galloping leap that she does every movement. And she also has what I think is going to be potentially game-breaking, in that her E is a wisp, and it gives you vision basically as far as it can travel. It can be killed, but it can also be redirected once after you send it out. So, I mean, it's much, much safer to send that to check on a boss if it's being taken or something like that. And her ultimates are really interesting as well, because both of them are on really short cooldowns, and they have charges. So, I mean, you're going to be able to use these pretty consistently throughout matches. The other hero I played a little bit of was Greymane, but I only played him in the arena, so I didn't get his full gamut of abilities necessarily, but he seems like a really exciting hero to play, just because the dynamic of switching between human and Worgen form is really cool.
I played... Oh, go ahead.
No, Charlie, I was gonna say I know that you got to play a lot in Lunara, and you seem to really, really be high on her. I was curious about your thoughts on her.
Yeah, in general, Lunara looks like she could end up being one of the stronger ranged assassins with a strong amount of harass. Just all her trait gives all of her abilities and her basic attacks a 3-second poison, which is really big. And the fact that she just moves 20% quicker at all moments, like, getting used to that hop is going to be big. There's going to be a lot of things that you can avoid that you normally wouldn't be able to. You might be able to hop over the corner of a gravity lapse that another hero, or a gravity bomb that another hero might get caught in, or just anything that has an AoE kind of delay thing. Jaina's Blizzard, Kel'thas's Pyroblast, all those things come to mind, Flame Strike, all those things come to mind. Like, she has the ability to move in a way that no other hero has, and while she doesn't get a mount, and it can feel hindering when you're rushing to various objectives, just in the flow of combat, it's amazing. And that Wisp is going to be... I mean, like, if she's not proven to be just this worthless hero by the pros, that Wisp is... And I can't see her being that, just because that Wisp is that important. Just a safe vision ward that you can move, and it lasts so long, and you can freely move it. I mean, that is so much of an advantage to, especially in the early game, against roaming teams. Like, it's going to counter things like that so hard. Like Jimmy had mentioned, boss checking, camp checking, objective checking, anything you need to check. There's no longer a reason to face check when she's around, because you Wisp check it, and there's nothing they can do about it. It's free vision.
So you use,
oh, go ahead.
Based on all that versatility, then do you see her as going to be a tier one hero when it comes to selecting heroes?
She's squishy as hell. So I mean, she is like really blow upable because she doesn't have any, like, other than being faster movement wise, she doesn't really have anything that allows her to escape things. But a player who positions her well and plays her smartly, I think will be very happy with that. I could see tier one. I mean, I think it's going to be one of those things where when you see a good one like Gazlo, you are going to be scared. Like in the right hands, she is going to be a pain in the butt, especially when teams know how to capitalize off of her vision. And that poison harass is no joke. Her damage gets crazy late game, it felt like, and also, at level 20, she has the option to take a storm skill called Abolish Magic. And what this does is it dispels all stuns, slows, roots, polymorphs, and damage over time effects on the target you cast it on and herself.
And you, yeah.
That means you have something to get rid of Living Bomb. You have something to get rid of another Lunara's poison, or just any damage over time. This is the first time we have the opportunity to remove damage over time effects, so that alone makes her a great counter pick, especially in the late game. Mm-hmm.
So, moving on a little bit then with Greymane. I mean, Greymane, I gotta play him. I didn't get a chance to play Lunara, but I gotta play Greymane a little bit, and the thing about Greymane is he was very difficult to play, in my opinion. Just because I didn't, when I first played him, I didn't understand what his real utility was. It wasn't until I played him like a second or third time that I'm like, okay, he is meant to be a ranged character with melee capabilities to help finish people off. The whole object is to kind of sit back, use your range stuff, and when you go in for the kill, change into that worgen and just start tearing him up from there. Do you, either of you guys have any input then on Greymane, his abilities, and how you see him playing out in the meta?
Jimmy, I'll let you go first. I know you played him just a little bit. I've got a good grasp of what I want to say, but okay. It'll take a minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much in agreement with what you said, JR. Like, you start from the human form, which is the ranged attacking. And then you jump in for the kill with the worgen, and the worgen form really does some serious damage from what I saw. Like I was saying, I only played him in the arena, So, I mean, that's a little bit of a confined box. Of, you can't really tell how good a hero necessarily is from that. But I was able to jump on people and just tear them up really quickly. And this looks like it's going to be a really fun hero to learn. But I think all the heroes that they announce have a fairly high learning curve, which is a little surprising to me. And
agreed.
Also, during the hero deep dive panel, they kind of talked about why they chose to release these heroes at this point, and they're all ranged assassins, basically. And they were looking at the win rates and pick rates of heroes, and as you can see, like, a lot of ranged assassins are picked, like Jaina and Kale, and they decided, they kind of alluded to that they didn't want to nerf those heroes, but they just wanted to have new heroes in those roles to hopefully even out the hero choices at that that point.
That makes sense. Yeah,
that's a very good idea, I think, because the ranged assassins in this game do need a little more variety, and I think that's exactly what Greymane's going to offer. His ability to freely switch between ranged and melee, depending on what you need, is such a boon to almost any team comp, especially comps that like having an Abathur around, or like running like someone like a Tassadar, somebody who's more of a utility kind of support damage person. Greymane provides that versatility pick that will complement things like that so well. The ability to switch on the fly from firing off shots to jumping in on people is something that you can really just use to your advantage depending on how the rest of your team is doing, especially like the positioning of your other range DPS, or where your tank is at in that situation, or who Tassadar might need to shield, things like that. One of the best things about him that kind of shows that off is his ultimate mark for the kill. And that's just, it's got a very long range, and whoever it hits gets a big vulnerability debuff on them. And then you can hit your ultimate button again to turn into the wolf and jump right to them. So imagine getting good positioning on a Miralis who's keeping somebody up and being a pain in your team's ass, and then all of a sudden, mark for kill, boom, you do damage, they're vulnerable, you jump in on them, you start attacking them, Tassadar throws a shield on you, or Abathur throws a hat on you, the rest of your team knows it's time to get Miralis down. I mean, that's the kind of thing that Greymane brings to the table, and there's a lot of times where you're in situations in draft mode. Like, do we need melee assassin? Do we need ranged assassin? Well, Greymane's going to turn into. Why not take both?
Yep, I agree 100% on that. Like I said, though, he's going from that ranged to melee, and knowing when to do that is what's going to make you a good player on Greymane, and I think that isn't going to be something that's going to be very easy for players to do.
No, he does not seem like an easy hero to play in any sense of the word. I think he's a very strong character who we're going to see a lot of crazy plays out of, but yeah, I think you're 100% on there, JR. It's just going to be one of those things where it's going to be a lot of people who want to play Greymane, but he's got a high skill cap, and it's not going to be easy.
Speaking of a hero that a lot of people are going to want to play, though, the last hero that was revealed was Cho'Gall. And Cho'Gall is the first hero that we've seen that two players take control of. He's one hero, two players. Two players, one hero. Sounds like a dirty video that I don't really want to go watch. But... But I remember Cho'Gall, that was like the big thing during one of the World of Warcraft April 1st Fools. They had the whole, double-headed ogre there. That was going to be the new race.
Yeah.
Two players are going to play the one hero, and that was back in, like, I want to say 2004, 2005.
It was one of their early April Fools ones, because that was when I was still playing WoW, and I remember going, oh, wait, no, it's April 1st. Yeah.
They did actually mention that during the Hero Deep Dive panel, and I think it was 2004, 2005.
Yeah, that was before we were used to just hating the internet on April 1st.
Yeah, so this hero, like, basically, one player chooses Cho, the other one chooses Gaul. And you each have your own separate abilities that basically synergize with each other. One player has control of the movements. The other player can do some speed bursts. And then their abilities kind of work with each other. They each have their own separate talents. Yep. And it's just a weird way to play. I got to play one game with Charlie, and I had no idea what the heck I was doing, and Charlie had no idea how to move, and we died a lot.
Yep. Yeah, we died quite a bit. It was one of those things, too, where I played Gaul later, and I was like, oh, okay, I kind of get what I'm supposed to be doing as Gaul and what I should be doing as Cho. So I think anybody who's interested in playing this character will need to play both sides a couple times so they can kind of learn to know what the other side is doing. Personally, I think this hero, while probably having the coolest concept ever and being the funnest hero to play, is going to be a disaster. He looks... I mean, like, on top of the fact that he counts as two of your hero picks, essentially, and your two players have to be so good that they make up for the loss of an extra body, it's also one of those things where you have to build around him or the team's going to focus him down. So I think there will be successful Cho'Gall comps that are competitive, but I think just in general, quick match play, like, hey, I want to play Cho, let me select Cho, and then somebody else will pick Gaul, and we'll have some fun. No, it won't be very fun. Not for the other players, anyways. But that being said, I mean, there's some interesting teamwork. His E ability, the player who's Cho throws this rolling boulder out, and the player who's Gaul can hit E to activate it and make it explode. So there's that. The player who's Cho is in charge of the movement. The player who's Gaul, his Z button is the only thing he can do to affect the movement, and that gives you a big speed burst. Gaul has a lot of short cooldown damaging abilities. His Q is just like a little shadow bolt skill shot. It's kind of like Nova Snipe, a little less range. And his W is something that throws out three balls based on the area in which, like, basically you can control the width in which they bounce from your left by moving your mouse left or right. So if you want them to be in short successive bounces, there is a way to line it up so all three balls hit a hero once each time. Or you can spread them far apart so it bounces far across the field. That's going to take some getting used. That's going to be basically the Gaul's player's biggest responsibility. Cho has a dash with his Q, and it's a little weird. It's got okay damage, but it can really put him out of position, and if your team isn't ready for you to dash, I looked at it as almost more of an escape or a reposition away. I do think Tassadar, again, someone like a Tassadar and Abathur is going to be his best friend. Less so Abathur, though, because you're already down one body on certain maps, but where you don't need a lot of bodies to channel, like if you're not on Dragon Trail, you might be able to get away with Abathur. I don't know, it's a lot to put on two players, I think, but he is very fun, and I do think there will be some cool things happening with Cho'Gall. I'm skeptical.
Well, I think where you lose out on having that extra hero is Cho'Gall is very, very tanky. I mean, he is like a boss out there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's very, very difficult to take down because, and he has to be for, you know, giving up a hero spot. If you take him down, you're essentially taking down two teammates in one shot.
And they get credited that way, too, so.
Right. And so, I mean, on one hand, yeah, you're down, you know, maybe an extra lane or whatever, but I can see on some of the smaller maps, like, any of the smaller
Spider
maps,
Queen.
Like a Tomb of the Spider Queen, Cho'Gall is going to be insane.
Yeah.
I think.
There's a chance he could be really great. Like I said, I'm skeptical, but I'm not coming out here saying Cho'Gall is garbage. I have to see it in action, and I think the randomness of Quick Match might make him seem worse than he actually is. But when teams are coordinated and working together, there's definitely a chance for Cho'Gall. I mean, the benefit of losing the body is also that your warrior and your assassin are always in the same place. So, I mean, if you can work with that and learn how to make that a big plus for your team, it can be very devastating. Especially if the other team doesn't have a Cho'Gall. If you're doing, like, a ranked draft. Which, by the way, they said when you're doing ranked draft, whether it be Team League or Hero League, he can only be picked when you have two picks. So you can't, like, you can't first pick him. So the team with the first pick is almost at a disadvantage nowadays if they plan on going Cho'Gall, because they lose access to Cho'Gall. Just something to think about moving forward in the future for ranked draft and team league.
Yeah, I was kind of curious how that was going to work in any kind of ranked play, because you have to really coordinate with the other teammates on, you know, he can't be a last pick either.
Yeah,
correct.
For obvious reasons.
What's interesting, too, there, I think there could be some cool kind of, like, if you're the team picking, okay, let's say team one, they pick, you know, complete meta. They're like, okay, we're taking Uther, we're taking Kalthus, we're taking Leoric, whatever, you know. That's who we're taking as our first pick. We're getting the best pick. Then that team answers and goes, we go Cho'Gall. That's our first two picks. The other team has to look at it and go, okay, how are they building around Cho'Gall? What are they going to do here? So, I mean, it's going to create some interesting situations in draft, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't see it getting picked as much in draft. I see Cho'Gall a lot more. I think we would see Cho'Gall a lot more in quick match with friends playing together, yeah, than we would in any kind of competitive play.
And for people... Oh, I'm sorry, Jimmy, you haven't said anything.
That's the thing we kind of didn't mention, is this hero, you're not going to be able to buy it. It's only available to people who attended BlizzCon, bought the virtual ticket, or in some random people, I guess, I think is what they're going to do. And so you have to play with your friends who own the hero to be able to unlock it for yourself. So it's going to be spreading like the plague from Zul'Gurub and WoW years back, kind of.
Yeah, I call it Cho'Gates.
Right. Yeah.
Cho'Gates.
It will spread.
Oh, yeah. I think the other really interesting thing is this is coming out next week. Like, we're going to be playing Cho'Gall next Tuesday. I mean, we're recording this on the 10th, so we're a week away from Cho'Gall Madness.
Yeah. We're a week
away from watching Twiz
and Jimmy both saying they want to play Jimmy Cho'Gall. And then arguing the entire match just like Cho'Gall.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Which head will you be? Will you be Gaul?
I'll be Gaul.
Okay.
So you're gonna leave Twiz to do the positioning.
And you're gonna say not ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
No, I'm not ready.
There you go. You got it down. All right, we're good for next week. Wrap.
Sweet. It's going to happen, guys.
So, the map.
Anything else on the new heroes?
I got nothing on the new heroes. I mean, I said my piece. Jimmy?
I didn't get to play Cho'Gall, so mine's based off what I saw from other people playing him.
Yeah. So, okay, moving on to the new map. Towers of Doom, I believe, mm-hmm, is what it's called. It's a different map. It's Warcraft related. You don't actually attack the core. Instead, it's sort of like Sky Temple in a way, where the towers, the towers attack the core, so it's not like Sky Temple, but you have something else hitting the core for you.
You have to channel these things.
On Sky Temple, you can, of course, go and hit the core yourself. On this map, you can't. Instead, it's all about controlling the towers. If one of the towers goes down and gets controlled by the other team, you can go back and get it again, and then it starts hitting their core. So the whole object is to basically control the towers and win the game.
Yeah.
Charlie, you were pretty amped up about this map. Why don't you tell us more?
I love this map. This is seriously the coolest map I've ever played. There's three towers on each side. Each team has a little counter in the corner, starting off 3-3, because you each control three towers. They're not towers. They're forts. These are forts. They're regular forts like you would see in any other map, protected by a wall and two towers. Once those wall and two towers are down, those forts are open the rest of the game. If you take the enemy fort, it doesn't get blown up. What it does is it starts rebuilding into your own fort. And that means you now control four forts and the enemy controls two. So those 3-3 change from 4-2. Randomly at times, like in Cursed Hollow, there'll be these points that pop up at three different spots on the map that you need to channel. And when you channel them, Successfully, it fires off however many forts you control. So it could be as little as none. If for some reason you gave up all three of your forts and you went to channel, you're playing the map wrong, but hey, why not? You could fire off zero, or you could fire off six if you control all six of the towers. Usually it seemed like a lot of 3 and 3, sometimes a 4 and 2, depending on when they came up. And the channel points came up pretty rapidly. I'm not 100% sure, but I think each core, because they're not technically core, but they have health points. I think each one started at 36. And the goal was to get the opponent's core health points down to 0 before yours reached 0. There were also 4... bombardier camps, one at the bottom and the top, and two in the lower right and left side. And basically, these were like goblin sappers, for those who remember the Warcraft 2 Tides of Darkness days. And they didn't really do much when they were in lane, but once they had a clear shot of an enemy structure, they just ran at it and did a ton of damage.
Charlie, did you notice that there was a teleporter in the map?
Yes. What happens after one of the cores reaches a certain amount, there's a teleporter that opens up, and it's on each side. Basically, what it is if you're inside your own wall, because there's a wall, basically, and if any enemy gets close to your wall, there's just a, like, imagine 12, like, towers firing on a hero at once. It does a lot of damage, so enemies cannot get close to this. It is your safe zone. Inside there, behind that, there was a little teleporter waypoint. Once that was active, you could channel it for about a second and a half, 2 seconds, and it would bring you to the middle of the map. It's a nice way for jumping right back into the fight. There's also a boss, which is the Headless Horseman, and he resides in the top middle-ish area. And if you are able to take him down, he fires 4 shots to your enemy's core health points. So it seems like control of the boss will be viable for winning matches. Obviously, overextending onto the boss and getting yourself killed and giving the enemy a free cap is highly detrimental. Because that'll probably lead to free channels for your enemy as well. So making sure to take advantage of the boss seems key in this map. Also, I'm going to say, every time I saw Sylvanas on that map, I was scared. Because she can just shut down these forts that appear easily. And having that kind of ability in the map like that, where controlling forts is the most important thing, makes her a top-tier pick on that map, I believe. I think someone like Asmodan will rival her as well.
Yeah, I agree, because she can just stop them from shooting at all.
Right. She can just stand there and take down the tower by herself, no problem, especially if you got minions or God forbid, goblin sappers on their way. You're going to get those forts. At the right time, suddenly channels could turn from a 3-3 to a 4-2, which is it's a big difference, especially if there's only 2 channel points that spawn. What you thought was going to be an even trade is suddenly much more in your favor.
Right. I only got to play the map once. It only came up once for me. And one of the cool things that we learned during one of our interviews, which should be up probably by the time you listen to this, in fact, I think I'm uploading it tonight, is that this was kind of based off of Verathi Basin.
Yeah, the developers told me and Alebeard, who were in the room with them, humble brag there, that this map conception started off as a Verathi Basin with channel points, and whoever controlled the most channel points for the longest amount of times ended up winning the map. And they said it was because it was what everybody wanted. People wanted something different, something like a Verathi Basin. But there was a problem. There was no finality to it. Like, once it was finished, it just kind of was like, okay, the timer expired, this team won, and it felt very anticlimactic as far as, like, Heroes of the Storm goes. Because killing the core is a very big accomplishment in any game. You always feel good finally getting that final shot on the core. And in Towers of Doom, it does feel that way. Like, if you get that last channel point that gets you just enough points to kill their core's HP, you feel like, yes, we did it. Where I can definitely see what they were saying about Verathi Basin. Like, if you were just standing on a spawn on a channel point or whatever, trying to hold a position for a little while, I could see that getting very, like, turtly, sort of, okay, we've got the lead, we're not going to fight, we're just going to hold these areas, rotate down to the area they move from. That's not Heroes of Storm.
No. No, I think they made the right decision with what they did.
So, Jimmy?
I got to play it once, like a JR, so I kind of got a feel for the map, and I didn't totally understand it until I played it. Like, I think it's one of those maps that, yeah, we can explain it to you 100 times, but once you play it, you'll truly understand how the map works, and it's really fun. It's really nice to see them really play with the mechanics of the game and really push the boundaries of what this kind of game can play like, and I'm excited to see it in the game, and I hope it's in soon because it'll be a nice breath of fresh air for the game.
Yeah, I was gonna say, have they even announced when this is gonna hit?
No,
they just previewed it. I think what's gonna be really cool too is seeing if the competitive scene likes it, because there are maps that they have that the pros don't even touch. You never see Haunted Mines on the pro scene and whatnot, and I'm wondering how Towers of Doom will be received in that aspect.
Yeah. I agree. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was, this was the thing that all of us were surprised by. No one predicted this. I mean, we predicted new heroes, we predicted new maps. We did not expect to get a new mode, a new game mode in the game. The new game mode is called Arena, and the way that it plays out is basically it's an all random, all middle.
Yep.
Very similar to what we've been doing with patrons. But this enforces it and is a game mode centered around it. The cool thing is it's by all random, it means you can have multiples of the same hero.
Uh-huh.
In fact, you can have games where all you play is Thrall. Everybody plays Thrall.
Yep. We did that one.
Yeah. Or you can, but the way that it works is each person gets 3 heroes randomly selected. And you get to choose one of them. So in the cases of the all Thrall, everybody got Thrall on all 3 choices. So that's all they could select.
Oh, funny.
And then once you get in, and then it's just it's objective-based. So there are, you know, something you got to do in the middle of the map that encourages team fights.
Mm-hmm.
And also whoever, you know, does the objective ends up winning the game. And they do it in a best 2 out of 3, so it's like a little tournament mode thing going on.
And the maps are like just mini versions of the maps that are already existing in the game.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, the Sky Temple one there is like one major Sky Temple that's constantly active that can be fought for control of. And then randomly there's 2 mini ones that spawn that only last for a certain duration. The Garden Terror one, there's 1 giant Garden Terror that always... It'll spawn, then it'll spawn 4 of the sap sporling camps or whatever for small amounts of seeds, then another big one will spawn.
And the object of that is just to collect 100 seeds before the other team.
First team to 100 seeds, yep. this was so much fun, guys. I absolutely adored this mode. It was just lovely. I had so much fun playing it. Just thinking about the possibilities of what could be. I heard, you know, Trixler had retweeted somebody did a 10 Murky match. We were a part of a 10 Thrall match. I witnessed a 10 Zagara match. There was screenshots of a 10 Gazlo match. Imagine a 10 Nazebo match. Like, one side just zombie walls the entire area away from the enemy team, and you just go, haha, we got this objective. I mean, there's so much fun to be had in this mode, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it, especially, like, players who are really good at the game, like pro teams jumping in as a team and just getting randomly, you know, destroyed by something they had no way to prepare for. Stuff like that just seems very fun to me.
Yeah, I think the mode is actually really good for new players.
Yeah.
Because one of the nice things about it is you start off, you choose your ultimate ability, one of the two. And that is the only choice you make all game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there are no talent choices.
It's like playing a hero at level 10 the entire game.
Yep.
Then you never get the big talents. So, yep.
Yeah. And it's a very straightforward on what you need to do. Just go fight with your team. Try to win the objective. You don't have to worry about laning. You don't have to worry about experience. You don't have to worry about talents. You don't have to worry about any of that. Heroes of the Storm is a very simple game to begin with, but they made it even simpler with this mode.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's easy to get caught up in how important like a ranking is when you're in the middle. Like when you're between pro and between noob, you're just worried about your ranking and you're just like, I'm gonna get out there, I'm gonna play all these games, I'm gonna do my best, I'm gonna get better, I'm gonna show that I'm better than everyone else. But Heroes of the Storm at the heart is a simple concept, and Arena really enforces that. It's something that just kind of says, guys, this is for fun. Just go out there and have some fun. Play some random heroes. Get in there. Skirmish with each other. And it's what people were trying to capture with ARAM, but as the developer said in that interview that we did, they basically said, like, we wanted to do ARAM, but we didn't want to just copy and paste ARAM and say, here you go, guys. We wanted to put our own spin on it. So there are map objectives. There isn't just an all-random, unless every team is the same character. And that's the randomness of it. Every now and again, you might queue up for this, and it might be 10 Illidans, it might be 10 Thralls. But every now and again, you're going to have three choices. And it seemed like they stuck within your class when you have three choices. I noticed, like, usually I would have a choice between three supports or three assassins or three tanks, and it balanced the team a little bit that way. So while it is random, it's not all random. You know what I mean? Like, it right. They did their own thing with it, and I really respect Blizzard for that, because it would have been easy to go, you guys want all random, all mid? Here you go. That's what you're doing. Have fun. This is exactly that. Instead, they said, we hear what you're doing, but we think we can tweak it and do something a little cooler.
Yep. Yeah, no, this is by far probably my preferable way to play Heroes right now. I'm looking forward to hopping in there with our patrons. Mm-hmm. And playing this mode. Once again, I don't think they have a release date on when this is going to hit, but I hope it's soon, like real soon, like I hope next week soon.
I don't endorse gambling because it's not legal, but if you've got five people together to verse five other people and you wanted to bet potato chips on who would win, this mode would be the best mode to do it for. So bet any amount of potato chips against Team BlizzPro, and then we'll see what we can do.
There we go.
I cannot afford that many potato chips.
Look,
Charlie.
I'm just saying. Look, the amount of potato...
You already ate all my potato chips.
That's
at
true. That's true. You shouldn't have brought those potato chips. I warned you.
Don't... Those, in the future, if you go to BlizzCon, do not bring potato chips to BlizzCon with Charlie in the room.
That's true. That's true. Or, if you bring potato chips, tweet me, at BalrogFanBP, and I'll come help you get rid of those potato chips.
There you go.
That's also very true.
But yeah, Charlie and I played Arena, and it was a lot of fun. We went 1-2, so we didn't win the whole thing, but it was a lot of fun. Like, I feel like this could potentially be a good introduction to other heroes for newer players, because they're kind of forced to get out of their comfort zone and learn on the fly new heroes, but not in the high stress environment of the quote unquote real game.
Right, because they don't have to worry about the talents and stuff.
I mean,
what talent do I pick? I don't know what I'm doing.
You just have to worry about the ultimate, so it'll be interesting.
My question, and what me and Jimmy played too, real quick, I want to say, it was funny. Jimmy looked over at me, he's like, well, there's these three heroes and Greymane's here, but I know these two. Who should I pick? I was like, pick Greymane, dude. You haven't played Greymane yet. Have some fun. He was like, oh, yeah. Took Greymane. Ended
that was
up having
the one
a blast playing Greymane. Yeah. Ended up having a blast playing Greymane. And that's what Jimmy was just saying. Like, you can just play a hero you don't usually play and kind of mess around and maybe even get to know them a bit or realize, this hero has a lot of things I like. I should try them out more. One thing I'm curious about mainly, though, is do your heroes get experience when you pick them? Do you get any sort of gold rewards? Do you get any experience rewards for your profile when you play this mode? None of that was really revealed, and none of it was shown during the testing, so that'll be interesting to see moving forward, because there are a few heroes that I do not like playing in a competitive setting, but would still like to level up to get various benefits, whether it be skin recolors or mounts or free gold rewards. And if I could do that in ARAM, Arena, that would just be even better.
Arena. No, I agree. Like, looking back at, like, let's look at Hearthstone for a minute. When they introduced Tavern Brawls, which is not a competitive thing at all. If you choose a hero and build your deck on there, it counts towards your quests.
Yep. It helps with your quests.
It counts towards your experience. It counts towards all of that. So I really hope that they do the same thing with heroes. Because it would allow me going, okay, well, here's a hero that I haven't gotten to play a lot of. I want to level him up, but like Charlie said, I don't want to play him in ranked or, you know, even quick match. Gives me the opportunity to do so.
What would be interesting, too, like, since it was best 2 out of 3, let's say you go all 3 matches, and all 3 matches you pick a different hero, would you be getting, like, experience after the match? Would you get the special arena screen that shows, like, because I would figure the experience or gold gains, if they happen, would have to be significantly less than playing an actual game, because the matches...
They might count all 3 as the actual game, maybe. Well, no, because you can choose 2 different heroes, because you're going to get one every time.
That's what I'm saying. And it'll be interesting to see. I hope there is some sort of reward to it. I mean, if you play AI, you get experience and gold at a significantly reduced rate. Or do you even get gold in AI anymore? I don't remember.
Know.
I've been so long since I played AI. I'm just too good for that anymore, guys.
I think you do.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, you get a reduced amount, so... I would imagine Arena would... Like, these are fast-paced matches. Even if they're 2 out of 3, you're going to be done even on a 3-game match probably in about 10, 15 minutes tops out of all 3 games.
Yeah.
Because a game can end within, like, you know, 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
Right. Yeah, it's very fast-paced. Yeah. One thing I would like to see is... I really like the best 2 out of 3 deal that they had going on. And I think it would be cool to see that implemented in the other game modes.
I would love to see it in Team League. That's the only mode I would want to see it in.
I wouldn't like it in Quick Match.
No, especially if you had to vote on it. And your team was like, we can get him. And you're like, dude, I'm so done. Let me go to sleep. But if you're on a team with like 5 people that are all like your team, it would be nice to have like a vote for rematch on both sides. Especially in those games that are close.
Or even have it in custom mode.
Yeah, custom mode would be a great place for that, too, as a test.
Yeah. So, anything else you guys wanted to talk about on Arena?
Hurry up and bring it out.
That pretty good.
Blizzard.
Yeah, hurry up and bring it out. I agree 100% on that. So, the next thing we wanted to talk about, there's one of the panels here was the... they did a Heroes of the Storm State of the Game panel, and there's some interesting news that kind of came out of that. Jimmy, why don't you lead us off on some of that?
Yeah, I mean, they talked a lot of balance stuff, and specifically they talked about win rates of heroes, and their goal for all heroes is between 45% and 55%, and they kind of showed off who was on the higher and lower end of that. Like, on the higher end are Lost Vikings at 57%, Butcher at 56%, and Leoric at 54%. And on the low end was Abathur and Stitch is both at 44%, Zeratul at 46%, and
That's because Abathur's
exactly,
AFK all the time.
And Tassadar at 47%. So
they also mentioned that Lili and Murky have the highest win rates,
which is interesting. I'm surprised that Murky's that high up there, but apparently Trixler's got his way.
I've said for a while now, cheating the death timers really is not a good idea for games like this. You do not want heroes who exploit the fact that everybody else has to pay a penalty for playing bad when they don't. I've always hated that Leoric and Murky both have the ability to get around that.
Yeah, that's true. But on kind of more specific terms of balance, they did mention that Uther is going to get some changes. Divine Shield cooldown will be increased to 90 seconds, and Eternal Devotion's duration will be decreased to 8 seconds. So, probably some needed changes for that hero.
Yeah, Uther was too strong.
Uther is too strong. But no, the biggest thing that I wanted to really highlight on here was the matchmaking. The matchmaking changes that they're coming out with. They're not happy with, because they've been using StarCraft II's matchmaking, and they're not happy at all with how that's working out with Heroes of the Storm. So much, in fact, they're just going to scrap the whole thing altogether and build up a new one. And they said that the new version should be coming out this year. So, in the next 2 months.
Yeah.
This is a different dynamic.
Surprises me.
I'm happy that they're doing it. This is this isn't a one-on-one dynamic like StarCraft. This is a 5v5. And there needs to be a different set of matchmaking for that. So I'm glad that they're throwing the StarCraft 2 way out the window.
Yeah. They say that at launch, the MMR was inflated by the experience increase where new players had a 38% win rate, but now they have a 48% win rate, and that the MMR has just gotten out of whack because of stuff like that. They said that 80% of the games are pretty even on MMR, but it's a 20% of games that are just completely different scales and just throws the game off completely and gives those 20% of players that are stuck in those games just a bad experience with the game.
Yeah, I'm in that early MMR lower end cap where, like, I hadn't really got a full grasp on the game and got good at it until later. And I definitely feel it. I feel like when I'm on the team of players who are marginally better than the other team, and I kind of, like, call the shots, I feel like we're way ahead of the other team and it ends snowballing. Or if I have two or three just really new players who don't really know the game very well, it goes against me very hard no matter how well I play. So it's kind of a problem for me in my experience. I mean, I finished my placement matches and it put me at 44, and it's like, you know, I'm not saying I'm a pro player or anything, but when I finished before the reset, I was at rank 14, so I just feel, or maybe I was ranked 16. I was somewhere in that arena, but, I mean, just playing the way it is now, the MMR definitely doesn't feel right.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember, I don't know where I heard this. Hopefully it's not, like, private information. I don't think it is. But basically, they were saying that the matchmaking system would just, like, stop trying after, like, 3 minutes, even though there's a max of, like, 10 minutes, it had already stopped trying to match your MMR and would just find the quickest match that it could find. So that...
Yeah, I believe they brought that up.
Yeah, so that, like, 7-8 minutes that you were waiting were basically worthless.
And that got up. That got upped recently is what happened.
Yeah.
That got up to, like, a 5-minute mark.
And then, furthermore, in the panel, they looked at, they were kind of talking about what they're looking forward to in next year, 2016. They're working on improving MMR accuracy, improvements to team MMR. Personal performance will be affected by your individual performance.
Woo.
So that'll be good for your individual MMR. And MMR will be hero-based as well, which is, I think, super critical.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And they did mention that preseason will likely continue for a long time, and ranked play will see changes such as bans in the lobby. And the last thing they talked about,
yes,
a death recap screen will be coming, as well as removal of talent gating, finally, and the number of free heroes will be increased to 10.
That's huge.
Yeah, the number of free heroes is huge.
Bans?
What can you guys explain to me the death recap screen? I'm not familiar
with
it.
What's going to happen? I mean, if it's like any other game, like that other game or that other game, basically what happens is it'll show the 10 to 15 seconds that led to your death after you're dead. So rather than it just showing, you know, a gray screen and you're watching what's already going on, you have the option. I think most of the time you have the option, I don't know, I think you should always have the option anyways, to click on something that says death recap, and it might show you where the other player was hiding, when they came out of the bush after you, what kind of things they did to set you up for that death. Therefore, you can kind of learn from your mistakes a little bit on the fly and say, okay, well, if I wasn't standing there at this moment, or if I would have thought at that point in the match that somebody might be hiding in the bush right there, I might have avoided this death. So it just kind of shows you exactly what led to you dying.
Cool, so they're adding Captain Hindsight to the
Yes!
game.
Precisely. Oh my goodness.
Oh, that got me good. We caught an episode of South Park in the BlizzCon hotel, and Jared had never seen Captain Hindsight, and it was used perfectly. Yes, Death Recap is Captain Hindsight.
Yeah. Sweet. So, I mean, how about the number of free heroes that will be increasing to 10? How big is that, Charlie? I mean, you were saying earlier that you thought this was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there has been so many heroes added. You know, like, from the alpha to now, we just have so many more heroes. Yet that has never changed. I mean, we've always only had access to 7 heroes per week for free. So new players will have that chance to actually look at 3 more heroes. And I'm curious how many of those heroes will be in a bracket of... well, you know, are you level 20? Are you level 30? Are you level 40? Things like that. Or if it's just going to be, you know, 8 free heroes base, and then 12 and 15, you get 2 more. So,
yeah.
But that's a lot of heroes. 3 more heroes per week is a big deal. You're going to see different strategies evolve in Quick Match, especially where... I mean, the joke early on in the day was always, hey, it's free Nova week, let's not play, or hey, it's free Nova week, let's all pick Tassadar, you know, so
yeah.
We'll see more things evolve out of that.
All right. So last but not least, I didn't get a chance to watch any of the tournaments, but I did get, or any of the tournaments that went on, let alone Heroes of the Storm. But Cloud9 did rise up.
USA.
USA.
Win it all. They did it in, what, like 3-0?
Yeah, it was a 3-0.
Best out of 5.
3-0. Best out of 5. Destroyed...
Dignitas.
Dignitas?
And yep. Dignitas ended up upsetting Na'Vi, which was really expected kind of to run away with the whole tournament.
Well, Dignitas really, really showed off their Tyrael in that Na'Vi match from what I saw. Sanctification just ruined Na'Vi so hard to the point that Tempo Storm banned, I'm sorry, Cloud9 banned Tyrael in every single game. So their the Digitas's Tyrael was so good, and Cloud9 respected it so much that they went ahead and said, okay, we're going to take away that whole Tyrael thing you're doing every single game.
Yeah.
Let's see if you can beat us now. And to Digitas's credit, like, This wasn't your grandma's 3-0 per se. Like, this wasn't a 3-0 get out your brooms, laugh at the other team. This was a 3-0 where if Cloud9 had made a singular mistake, a single mistake in the last like 4 minutes of the match, they could have easily given up that match to Digitas. It was so close, especially game 3. It was Garden of Terror, and there was just this big dance with the Garden Terror, and it was just this back and forth kind of like, okay, we're going to slowly chip away at this one keep, back and forth fight each other, trade losses here, trade heroes here, trade heroes there, but nobody was committing enough to make the big mistake, and it was because Cloud9 got that early pressure and took that early lead and made some great plays. The first 2 matches, the hero, nobody would have guessed. In match 1 and match 2, the guy who basically brought it home, Falstad. Who was talking about Falstad before this tournament? No one. And Falstad ended up looking like the best hero in the game in those 2 matches. And that's just crazy to me. So, I mean, it just shows you that there are no really, truly weak heroes in this game. And in the hands of the right player, if you like a hero, just put in the work and keep playing them. Because... I mean, someone like Falstad, if you would have talked ranged assassins, would probably be in the lower tier of discussions by, you know, the average internet Heroes of the Storm player. Like, give me Kel'Thas, give me Jaina any day of the week. Screw Falstad, I don't like him. He ended up being amazing in those matches, and just the whole thing in general was, it was so much fun to watch, and Cloud9 played beautifully.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna go watch it I hope that if you have the virtual ticket or the VODs available to go back and watch it as well. I heard it turned out to be a really great tournament. Unfortunately, I don't get to see a lot at BlizzCon. I get to go to interviews. I get to hang out up in the media room most of the day. And then that's about it. I get to play a few games here and there. So all of my panel watching, all of my esports watching is usually after BlizzCon with that virtual ticket. So that is what I will be doing the rest of the week. And I'll definitely be checking out the Heroes tournament because I heard it was very well done. And I'm excited to see Gilly casting because she deserved to be there, and both her and Jake, from Town Hall Heroes, they put in so much time, and to see them get on the big stage like that is pretty incredible. So kudos to those guys for, you know, getting to cast something like that, and you know, getting as big as they have become. But the biggest thing is, like, with the tournament was, you know, we had some controversy beforehand with Tempo Storm. Because Tempo Storm was basically the favorites going into this tournament as of about a month ago, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, definitely.
And they just fell apart as a team. Like, they had so much internal conflict that they just couldn't get it done. And they, from my understanding, they just didn't look good.
The World Championship is not the time to have that happen either. I mean, think about, like, you know, in any other sport, you know, Super Bowl, World Series, all of a sudden a bunch of reports come out, everybody hates each other on the team, let's go try and win this. It's not gonna happen. Like, that's a very scary prospect to deal with, and I can't really just, like I said this on a previous show, I can't just come out and shit all over Tempo Storm and say, you guys, all you gotta do is play video games for a living. Deal with it. No, living with people, working the same job as people, and being around the same people all the time can be very difficult. And that's what they were attempting to do. And it kind of backfired on them. And I think it kind of shows moving forward, like, you if you're gonna be good, you gotta put in a lot of work, but you also have to make time for yourself. It's important in almost all aspects of life.
Well, like any sport, you put any kind of blame with that on the management, to be honest.
Yep.
Because, I mean, sports in general, if your team is not clicking, then there is something wrong higher up that is causing that to happen. It could be, like, I know there's reports out there of players not refusing to practice, players just not getting along well with each other, things like that. So it's just one of those things that I just think if you were to ever run an esports team, you might want to look at Tempo Storm and see how they did things, and you might want to not go the same route that they did.
Yeah, and they did actually announce 2 days ago, maybe a day and a half ago. They did drop Zuna and Arthalon from the team, so they are obviously rebuilding now. And Dread,
yeah, and they're probably this time they're going to go with seven players, because to go with five and then not be able to change your roster, that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, that speaks to what you were saying, something to do with management and the higher up. Whoever made that decision obviously wasn't thinking about the future, and they were thinking about themselves and current glory.
Yep. I agree.
I think anytime you're building a team or you're doing anything to move towards the pro setting, you need to keep in mind that this is a game, and humans play this game, not robots. So treat your players like humans and make sure they have the luxury of being apart from one another, having time to themselves, and still being told that, hey, you're going to go out there and you're going to play this game competitively. So we need you to be ready to do that. If you need time off, if you need time to yourself, or if you need more time to practice, or you need more time with your team, tell us what you need, and we'll make that happen. But don't just, like, if I'm not mistaken, they were living in a house together, basically, right?
Right.
They slept.
Well, that's normal, though. That's really normal.
But how long did usually it go on for? That feels like too long.
But usually you have like team rules or house rules or things like that to stop this stuff from happening.
I mean, I watched the Real World MTV, and that never turned out well for those people. It seems even worse when you have to play a competitive game. I mean, I'm just surprised that that was the solution, the approach taken.
Well, you have to treat it like a job, right?
Course.
You have to so you have to have respect for each other. And what you're doing is you're throwing in a bunch of people who are young people. They're just, you know, like most gamers really are, and they're just getting out there, learning the world themselves, without any real direction. Which once again falls on management. You want to have someone in there that would teach these people how to interact with not only each other, but how to respect one another, how to respect the house, how to respect the game, and all of those various things that would go into being able to learn together and grow together. And I think that just wasn't there for
them. Yeah, I feel like management could have done something a little differently too. Like said something like, okay, 12 hours of your day, 6-7 days a week, you're at this house, you're working on this game. The other 4 hours, that's for you. Get 8 hours of sleep wherever it is you sleep. Come back, do it in. Punch in, punch out. Instead of like, you live here now. You live with these people. Practice together, live together, do everything together. That approach just seems very silly to me.
Maybe. Maybe. So anyway, I think it's time to kind of wrap things up here. So it's actually a pretty long show.
Yeah,
guys.
We put some meat in
definitely.
It. Had a lot to talk about. So anyway, you can catch us at Heroes Power Hour on Twitter. We do normally live stream twitch.tv/BlizzPro Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Central Time or 7 p.m. Pacific. And then if you're a patron and you want to donate to the show and help with our costs that we have associated with the show, you can visit us patreon.com/heroespowerhour and then be able to play with us. Hopefully here soon, that's going to be Arena, and that would be awesome.
Yes. I'm looking forward to Arena matches with the patrons. Also moving forward, formats might change a bit. Patrons might get to play with us, during the gameplay portion as well.
That would be pretty cool as well. So, we'll have more details on that probably next week, I'm sure, when Twiz is back.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow me on Twitter at Eldorian. You can follow Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant. You can follow Charlie on Twitter at BalrogFanBP. Anything that you want to leave us on here, Charlie? Any shout-outs or anything like that?
I just want to say that Heroes of Storm future looks brighter than ever. Seeing the World Tournament, seeing all the new changes coming, this looks just like such a treat to play moving forward, and I can't wait to hop back into the Nexus and really get focused again.
How about you, Jimmy? Any shout-outs you have as Charlie died on the microphone?
Oh my goodness. Just that I'm really happy with the state of the game now with all these announcements. I mean, obviously, the game is always going to need more heroes announced and more maps because it's just how the game works. But I think the state of the game panel really put my mind at ease that they do really care about the MMR and matchmaking, and they're really concerned about that, and it's something that they're going to be fixing soon.
All right, my shout out today is going to go to the BlizzCon people that did not wash their hands and gave these two guys con crud, because I'm going to be spending the next 2 hours editing out all of their coughs and sneezes and other noises they're making in the microphone.
Thank you, Dirty Blizzard fans. We love you.
Thank you, Dirty Blizzard
fans. I shook so many of your hands, and so many of you gave me AIDS.
And on that note, I think we are done. Thanks for listening. We will see you guys next week.